Here's neoconservative Richard Perle in a 2003 interview with Steve Paulson.
Now, one of the complaints, the criticisms that a lot of people who opposed the war against Iraq voiced was the morality of preemptive war. Iraq had not attacked us. What do you make of this as a moral issue?
Well, I think it's a practical question and not a moral question, although I'm perfectly happy to defend our Iraq policy on moral as well as practical grounds. I'm sure you would agree, and the people you're referring to would agree, that if we saw a missile being erected on a launcher aimed at the United States, and we had the capacity to destroy that missile on its launcher before the countdown, we would be justified in doing that. In fact, we'd be irresponsible and negligent if we didn't do it. That's an act of preemption. It's also an act of self-defense. Do we have to wait until the missile lands on our territory? What is the right moment when the requirements of self-defense justify our acting before we are struck? And I think that can only be answered in the specific context of the specific situation. But on moral grounds, it seems to me, if we can protect the lives of our citizens by acting preemptively, the president has an obligation to do that. We're right to do that.
That's what neoconservative Richard Perle said before the war started. But that was 2003. In light of all we now know, do neoconservatives still support their pre-war arguments justifying the war in Iraq? We asked Douglas Feith, a leading neoconservative intellectual. He was the Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, the number three position at the Pentagon, serving under Donald Rumsfeld. Feith was one of the architects of the Bush administration's war on terrorism. He's also been a lightning rod for controversy and was investigated for allegedly distorting pre-war intelligence on Iraq. Steve Paulson talked with Feith about decision-making in the aftermath of 9/11.
One of the common criticisms that you hear over and over is that there was tremendous goodwill towards the United States right after 9/11. There was great sympathy to what happened in this country. And then that seemed to go out the window with the war in Iraq, that generated all kinds of anti-American sentiment, especially in Muslim countries. And certainly you can argue that it has provoked many more terrorists to join al-Qaeda and other organizations than there were before that war.
I'm familiar with that argument. I'm not sure that it's correct. I'm not sure that we'll know until we get a bit down the road whether that's correct. It's a complex question. What are the trade-offs of different kinds of activities in the war on terrorism? And we were conscious of the fact that certain kinds of activities to respond to the 9/11 attack might generate more antagonism in the short term. But if they demonstrate that the Islamist extremist cause is actually being set back, it could persuade people that it's not worth fighting us. I think a lot of these questions are hard to answer as we're still in the middle of the war.
Mm-hmm. Now, clearly, this war on terrorism has also come at a steep price. I mean, not just in dollars and the lives of soldiers and civilians in the Middle East, but also in the civil liberties of people. American citizens have had their phones tapped. Innocent foreigners have been, on occasion, seized and even thrown into prison without recourse to due process. Do you ever wonder if the price is too steep?
It's an important question that troubled people in the administration from moments after 9/11 occurred. There was a recognition after 9/11 occurred that we were going to have to make some changes in the way we operated, and we're going to have to re-examine the trade-offs between civil liberties and public safety. I mean, I know that there are a lot of people who've criticized the administration as if the administration were full of people who were rubbing their hands with glee saying, oh boy, 9/11 gives us an opportunity to cut back on civil liberties. But that's a ridiculous caricature and completely false. I mean, in fact, my experience with people in the administration was that people were by and large focused on the difficulty of taking effective action to prevent follow-on 9/11 attacks, and recognizing that some of the actions we're taking were going to change this balance between civil liberties and public safety. It was a very well-known phenomenon in American history that when public safety is undermined and people feel threatened, the government generally takes measures to provide safety, even at the expense of some of the civil liberties that everybody would much prefer to have in place when there's not that kind of danger.
Right. And I think most Americans would agree with that, certainly right after 9/11, that there was this kind of need. I mean, this was such a horrible thing that happened. But do we still need this kind of curtailment of civil rights? And, you know, the kinds of things that we keep hearing about, secret wiretapping of phone calls, or a black ops budget that's estimated at $27 billion, though we have no idea what the money is actually being spent on because there's no public record of it. I mean, I guess the point is...
Well, I think it's a good question to ask. I mean, I'll give you an example of what I mean by a trade-off of civil liberties and public safety. We had barriers erected between the FBI and the CIA for civil liberties reasons, where we said that they can't share information. And after 9/11, it was understood that one of the problems that put the government in a position where it couldn't deal as effectively as possible with the kind of threat that hit us on 9/11 was that foreign intelligence couldn't be shared with domestic law enforcement people. So people said, look, given the kind of danger that we faced and that materialized with the 9/11 attack, we should knock down this wall, this barrier that prevented the sharing of intelligence with law enforcement people. Now, that's an example of how you kind of redo the balance.
Which makes sense in a lot of ways. We've certainly heard about how there was such territoriality between FBI and CIA. It also does mean then that the CIA might go into the business of spying on American citizens.
And those are dangers. And one of the things that I said was very much at the fore of people's minds and was a major topic of conversation among many of us after 9/11 was, if there had been a series of 9/11 type attacks, there would be enormous pressure for the United States to adopt tougher and tougher measures, police state type measures. If there were a series of 9/11 type attacks, you could imagine the kind of clamor for intrusions on privacy, for inspections, for possibly racial profiling, and all kinds of other measures that the public might demand if it felt as vulnerable and exposed as people tended to right after the 9/11 attack. And part of the concern that I explained that we talked about among ourselves, among officials after 9/11, was that there's something of a ratchet effect often when it comes to setting certain civil liberties aside in favor of greater safety measures, that even when the threat recedes, you don't always have the full restoration of privacy and civil liberties. And one of the things we were concerned about is that the very nature of our society as a free and open society could be undermined if there were a series of 9/11 type attacks.
Looking back on your work in the Defense Department, what are you most proud of?
I think that the strategy that we developed after 9/11 that aimed at preventing the follow-on attacks that we feared would come was actually an important and sensible strategy. And we have not had another attack, a 9/11 type attack in the United States. And, you know, one can never exactly say what a cause and effect are. I think that our strategy contributed to this result, and it's an important result. And I think if you had asked most people on September 12th, 2001, you know, what chance would you give that 6.5 years later we would not be hit again? Most people would have not given it a very high chance. And I think that the development of that strategy and the vigorous prosecution of it were a contribution to the country.
Douglas Feith is the former Undersecretary of Defense for Policy. He's the author of War and Decision, Inside the Pentagon at the Dawn of the War on Terrorism.